Hey there, welcome to the Pasture Talk Podcast, your go-to for all things farming, family, food, and life here on the farm. Join us, your hosts and farmers, as we unravel the stories behind our regenerative practices on this multi-generational family farm. Throughout the season, we'll dive into the stories that shape our farm from the fields to your doorstep. We'll be talking about raising animals, navigating the joys and challenges of raising a family, and the fulfillment of serving our customers. So get ready for a front row seat to our journey, going behind the scenes to learn more about the farm, our team, and our family.
All right, so we wanted to sit down together and tell, you know, talk to people about our origin story. So I thought, you know, this is a natural first episode, and just take us back to the beginning, 1956.
That's when I was born.
Yeah. Well, that's the beginning. I mean, that's the beginning of all, you know, your childhood, and everything that led us up to
where we go
to the farm. Yeah. You know, when the farm, you know, as we know it now, started. So, you know, tell us how you what was childhood like, where you grow up, how you grew up.
Well, so I was born in Havre Grace, Maryland, lived in Forest Hill. All my childhood life through college with my parents. And my grandparents, both on the Bailey and Martin side, had farms. And I would work on the farms in the summertime. And then during school months, my grandmother Bailey and grandfather Bailey had a farm about a mile from our house. It's actually exactly a mile. And I'd ride my bike out and raise calves that I bought from my grandfather Martin. And so farming has always been in my DNA, if you want to call it that, and interest to farm. And then we fast forward to about 30 years ago, I started industrial farming, what my definition of industrial farming is, which is today's use of Roundup and synthetic fertilizers and practices, which started back in the 50s, actually. That changed the whole industry farming. From what my grandfathers and great-grandfathers farmed, which I call conventional farming. And that was the use of animals to graze and fertilize the fields. Even after a crop, they would be placed in there to graze what was left over and to build the soil. the one thing they didn't have in their early days was electric fence. And so it wasn't as easy to rotate and graze the livestock like it is for us today. But then Roundup and after World War II, synthetic fertilizers came from Germany, and the combination of those two changed how farming was traditionally, conventionally farmed, the land and the animals. And so we started industrial farming, and quite frankly, long story short, I was a failure at it. And we were not making money. Everyone else controlled what we did as far as product that was produced and sold. And in talking to your mother, Nick, Elizabeth, my wife, we decided to stop doing that and to get out of debt and to pay back all of the money that we had lost or owed in agriculture. And then we put everything in grass about 20 years ago.
I just want to pause there for a second, because I think also that, you know, what you didn't mention was that, you know, beyond the financial side of it, the way you were managing land, you didn't like,
Correct.
And you were, you know, looking, you know, you can never connect the dots, you know, moving, you know, looking forward, but always looking back, you know, you can connect the dots, you know, you, the chemicals that were used, you know, and still today, and the way things are done in row crop, you know, industrial row crop farming, you just knew that wasn't, you know, what you wanted to do, that you, and so I think, you know, you get a lot of credit looking back on things, that you were ahead of your time in that way. I mean, that was, you know, 20th century, you know, we weren't, you know, past 2000, that was in the 90s.
Right.
At that point, and you know, well before most folks were, it was even on the radar for organic or local, you know, food. We were in this middle part where seemingly most everyone was going to the grocery store, still buying processed foods, you know, a lot of fast food stuff. It wasn't on anybody's radar, and you really were ahead of your time in noting, you know. Didn't have the answer yet of you know what was the right thing to do, but you knew what you didn't want to do.
That's correct,
which is cool.
There's individuals and universities and like the Rodale Institution was a leader back then to try and transition into these regenerative farming, and Doug Cunningham. And Brian Taves were two individuals that I had regular contact with that influenced that as well. And constantly, you know, we were talking about other ways to do farming and to regenerate the soil and to use animals to do that.
Yeah, Doug, who, if you've come to the farm store, is here religiously on Fridays in
Correct.
The farm store, and he was a chemical engineer for the U.S. government his whole career, and now he's our organic,
right.
beyond organic vegetable farmer that you know sells produces and you know a lot of what we sell for vegetables, and he's an OG of the farm, and we'll talk through that and kind of who, you know, what it looked like when we started. And he was always there, in the beginning, but, you know, I was down at college and, you gave me a call and said, "Hey, I want to take you down to this farm." And it was Doug who put us onto Polyphase.
Correct.
I grew up with you, in tractors and combines and dump trucks. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And, I wasn't old enough to understand the things that were wrong with that, and every kid loves big equipment and you know, it's, you know,
yeah.
We're raising Reed and the kids to you know, hopefully they'll love animals and what we're doing out on pasture like I, you know, was into the equipment. And so when you called me and when, you know, Doug said, "You need to go down to Polyphase and check this out," you know, and he was the one, I think, that really just kept, you know, was persistent with you.
He did.
And I had no interest. I had no,
right.
I was like, "All right, well, I'll just go on this road trip with you, you know, for 4 hours and we'll check it out." And
well,
you picked me up and we took the drive and I don't know, it was one of those things that
yeah.
just changes the whole way you look at things. And I still, you know, have no reason for it or know why. I just, maybe, you know, it's the first time I saw we could do it, something like that here at our home farm. You know, you don't have hundreds and thousands of acres to, you know, what can you do with a small amount of land? And you know, it's probably one of the first times we saw an example. And this was before, you know, certainly before podcasts, I think before, at least before YouTube was popular.
Right.
And there, so there wasn't a lot of ways you could, you know, now you can go on, you know, any number of sources and find a ton of content on something like, you know, what we're doing. And that wasn't around back then. Social media was in its infancy. There were no iPhones, or there might've been the first version out, you know what I mean? So this was a whole, you know, people have to understand, even though this was, I guess we're talking around 2010 ish,
well, even before, yeah,
yeah. But so, it was a whole different ball game. Even, you know, just, you know, yes, I guess. It was around 2010.
About 2010.
It was pretty, yeah. So yeah. It was just a whole different ball game.
It was.
And, you know, as far as, you know, what was available and how you could learn about, you know, what we're doing now. And there was obviously books, which we bought and read and, you know, learned how to do things. But it wasn't what it is now for how people typically learn.
Well, I think there is a story to that too, right there. I want to go back to for a second. Doug and Brian Taves and I actually went down to Polyface before you and I did.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And we saw what it took and came back, and Brian and I decided that we were going to actually go after that. Doug was still working for the government. And then, so Brian and I shared a lot of things on how to get started and shared notes, and that was very helpful. We also went to PASA, Brian and I did, right about that same time, and learned.
Hey, everybody, this is Nick. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. I just wanted to take a quick break to invite you to visit our website, GrandviewFarming.com, where you can shop our full line of beef, pork, poultry, eggs, and so much more. Book your next farm tour, an overnight stay in our bank barn, or even your next event. So visit us at GrandviewFarming.com. All right, back to the pod.
A lot there. One of their first conferences that started on regenerative farming. And then when you and I went down to Polyface Farm, I think I picked you up around 3 or 4 in the morning. We got down there, and it was off-season. And
yeah.
Joel Salatin was there, and he had one of his farm managers answer any questions we had and gave us, you know, told us we could walk around and see anything we wanted. We did. We walked the whole farm.
Or what we knew
part
to
of
be.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we knew.
What we could find. What we could find.
Yeah. And then Bought some food. And we got in the car to come back. And I said to Nick, I said, what do you think about this? Your mother and I think that, this is maybe the direction we should take in the future. And you said you didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah. It still hadn't sunk in yet.
And in all fairness, you were raised on combines and big trucks and on tractors. And you would come out to the fields after school and run the combine for me so I could go unload trucks. And at a very young age, in fact, I think you had a toolbox underneath the seat to rest your feet on.
Mm-hmm.
So I understood where you were coming from. And so we went up the road about 45 minutes to an hour, really not talking much. When that was very unusual, because we would talk the whole time on the way down. And in any field trip we went on, even up to Penn State for the Ag Progress Days, we talked the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of unusual for us not to be talking. And I said, Lord, I'll just try and start off with 25 chickens and 25 meat birds, egg layers and meat birds, and see what happens. And you got a call. I said I had to pull in the gas station and get some gas.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a call from Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
And Leonard...
I don't remember any of this, but
yeah, Leonard, you asked, I could hear your side of the story. Later on, I got the full story. Leonard, you asked him, what he was up to, and he was up in Pennsylvania with his fiancée, and her parents had just bought this farm, and they were going to do this organic thing,
was that the same time?
It was the same trip.
I don't think they were engaged yet, but still.
Well,
they might have bought
it. Maybe a girlfriend. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Anyway,
you guys talked for about 45 minutes and got off the phone, and you said, maybe we should try this.
Well, it's one of those things you hear, and still when I hear, that's funny, I don't remember much of this, but even today, when I hear something once, you know, I still may not, but then I start, you hear some in one or two different, or two or three different places,
right,
different ways, and it catches your attention. And
so your mother had we've been talking and said at the time there's several articles in farm magazines and Lancaster Farm and papers and things about how hard it was to keep children on the farm, that they were all leaving the farm. And your mother said, you know, people have got to give them responsibility. If they don't have responsibility, aren't involved in the day-to-day business, they lose interest. They have no reason to be there. And so I shared that with you and said that I had decided to make you 60% owner of the business, and I would be 40% owner. And that immediately put you in charge. And even though you were still in college, that's the way we started out. And it was the best and smartest thing, one of the smartest things we ever did from the very beginning, because I didn't want to have anything to do with computers and social media, and all that was taking off. And you have taken that, you and Caroline at the time worked together some, and you've taken that and really used it to benefit the business and the farm. It wouldn't be what it is today without you doing that. And so we start off with 25 meat birds and 25 egg layers, and I remember processing those meat birds that first November. And
well, let's start before we dive into that. Yeah, okay. Because remember we had a cow too.
Oh, we did. Oh, yeah,
Lakota.
Yep. You had Lakota.
Yeah. So we, I was a junior in high school, maybe,
yes.
And we went out to a friend of a friend's ranch in
South Dakota.
South Dakota.
Yep.
And like something like 40,000. Like I mean, like a real
huge
ranch.
Yeah,
like 40,000 acres, and we did a, you know, we were rounding up groups of cattle in the spring. I guess it was spring. Springtime, I guess,
yep,
because
it was late
calves.
Spring.
Yep. Yeah, late spring, early. I guess, early summer. I was still in school because I remember.
I had to get you out of school.
You had to get me out of school. And
yep.
My teachers were like, you know, what are you, you know, what? They were upset that I was missing school. I probably learned more on that trip than I did that entire year of school about, every, you know, whatever I need to.
About life.
Yeah, about important stuff. So, but we drove out to South Dakota and we were branding and castrating and vaccinating calves,
yes,
with him, you know,
spring
and,
calves, yeah,
yeah, spring calves, and helping and turn them back out to pasture with the cows. And there was one calf that had a bad leg that,
right,
he said mama probably stepped on it or something at some point, or something happened to her, and she probably wouldn't make it, wouldn't be able to keep up with the herd. And out there, you know, predators and, you know, real legit stuff. So
yeah, wolves.
Yeah,
yep.
and so well,
Brad actually turned and said, and you could see the silhouette of the wolves up on the ridge line.
Yeah,
and said, see those wolves? And as summer goes, the grass will get shorter, and the herd will have to move faster, and this calf won't be able to keep up with it, with the herd, and those wolves will get it.
Yeah,
and Brad had offered, because of all the work you did that week there, that you could pick out any calf you wanted, and you picked that one.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, couldn't leave her out there to die. So, so yeah, we took her and put her in the trailer.
Yep.
And drove her back to Maryland. And
yep, put her in the horse trailer with us.
Yeah, and
had to stop and get a bottle, because we had to bottle feed her.
Yeah, right, right,
and
right.
We had stopped at a farm store out there and
I
got
don't know
all
if
that.
Tractor Supply was around yet.
No.
Not like
no.
It is now, for sure. No. Yeah, so we bring this calf back. Caroline and I and you worked its leg, her leg.
Well, yeah, you guys
and
sweat the leg. Caroline wrapped it. Sweat that leg, and when you guys were done, you could, unless you knew that calf had a limp or a bad leg, you couldn't tell.
Yeah, and she was around for a long time.
Yeah,
and we finally had her harvested because she was just old.
Too old, yeah.
And you know, she was you know, wasn't comfortable anymore, especially in the wintertime. And
right.
she was just going to die out there in the field at some point, probably. So we had her harvested. But, man, she was here for a very long time.
14 years.
No, not that long.
No, quite that long, no. Yeah.
But, yeah, so anyway, so we had one cow and 25 egg layers in that 4-foot by 8-foot trailer coop that we made.
Right.
And we sold eggs. We had we found a Craigslist. I don't know if it's Craigslist or Uncle Mike or somebody we had that used refrigerator.
Right.
And if you've been around the farm for a while, we have to have Angel on here because she has the funniest story of the first time. I'm not going to tell it because I want everybody to hear it from her. But the funniest story about the first time she came here. We were in a 1800s bank barn,
right? 1890s.
And just like in a very small portion of it, because the rest of it was filled with crap and everything,
hay,
whatever. That we had a refrigerator in there, used refrigerator, and we had eggs in there, and people could come out on Saturdays, and we had a cash box that was an old dryer sheet box, and it was just some cash in it, and you could buy eggs for, I don't even know what we sold them for at that time, $3 a dozen or something like that. And it was a few dozen a week, and the
first come, first serve.
Yeah, I mean hardcore customers. You had to be a hardcore, you know, really want those eggs to come out for that.
Right.
And that's, you know, kind of where we started. I think that was probably our first dollar we made was selling eggs. It had to be eggs out of the barn there. And then
it grew into freezers.
Well, they were people were asking for chicken,
right?
And we got I think the least amount they'll ship you,
right?
Peeps is 25. So we had 25 broilers, and we processed them. We did not get them at a time when it would be a good to process them.
Right.
We got them very late in the season. We had no idea what we were doing.
Right.
And we
set up a kill cone and a scalder in a burner pot and
very primitive.
And just short of eating it raw, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, so.
And then that night we had set up the night before, and that morning we walked out and it was 6 inches of snow on the ground.
Yeah, it was freezing rain.
It was freezing rain
this was the day it was going to happen, and we had Doug and Nick, and we did these birds. I'm pretty sure at least one person had frostbite, and it took us all day to do 25 birds.
To do 25 birds.
And we said we would never do this again.
Right.
Shutting down shop. That was it. it was been a good run.
And when we were processing the birds ourselves on the farm, the one thing you could always look forward to was Elizabeth had dinner, a hot meal in the house for everybody.
Lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, because even when we got to the point where we were doing 400,
right,
we were done by lunch.
So
needless to say, we didn't stop. That wasn't it. The farm's still here. That day didn't kill us. The further away you get from the pain and the memory of it, you're like, oh, I guess we'll do this again. But yeah, so that's how it started. 25, you know, one cow, 25 egg layers. Ended up doing 25 broilers and then
one grass-fed cow.
Yeah,
that's how grass-fed started.
Yep, and we you know grew slowly, and you know we had farmers markets.
We did.
Luckily, the Bel Air Farmers Market told us not to apply.
Right,
and they had. They said, you know, don't even bother putting in an application. We're not gonna, you know, you're not coming here. And at the time, it was rough. However, best thing that could have happened to us because that made us focus on our on farm stores.
Correct.
Still in the barn. I think at this point we had, you know, 6-7 chest freezers.
Right.
Because we had started with a couple pigs. I think at that
correct
you know, around that time. So we had eggs, some chicken, some pigs, some pork. And we doubled down on getting people out here to the farm, and wow, in hindsight, what a blessing that course that went, not only for the customers and that experience they get coming out here, which we still, you know, the customer, you know, having the farm store open on the weekends is still a very small part of our business. A lot, you know, a lot
today.
Of our customers, yeah, today, our, you know, back then it was the only business, you know, it was
the only
revenue you know, we had. Yeah, 100%. But today a lot of our customers, you know, choose to get their weekly orders or, you know, delivered to their door, which is great. We love that. But we, you know, we, that farm store stays open and will always stay open because we, from day one, have wanted people to come out and see what's going on here.
Yeah, we have an open door policy.
Yep. And so it's just the way things turned out for us, you know, we just seemed to just hit it right on, you know. Listen, there's no doubt, and I'm sure we'll have an episode where we talk about, go back and think about some of the mistakes we made and have, you know, so hopefully, you know, others don't make them. But, you know, we've had real lows, but, you know, hitting the high points, you know, having that, you know, doubling down on having a place here at the farm for people to come in and, you know, instead of farmers markets, was just a game changer. And I don't think that anything was as big as that until we started with the website and the evolution of that.
Correct. And, yeah, you speak of Angel, and there's some other customers I'm sure you can think of.
I'm hesitant because we're going to leave somebody out. That, right. I mean, it's like a hardcore OG
it's
customer,
a hardcore bunch.
And I don't want to name a bunch of people because I will inadvertently leave someone out that absolutely deserves to have their name, you know, mentioned. But yes, we have, you know,
if you received a GVF frying pan skillet. This past year, you're one of them hardcore customers, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, but that was just this past year.
Right.
So
prior to that,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, we, you know, I can think of, you know, half a dozen people off the top of my head that have just, you've been here for probably 10 or 12 years. I mean, just from the beginning.
Yes.
And it just, you know, it's awesome. Grateful for that. And we'll, you know, I know Linda's been here forever too.
Yeah.
But
my family, yeah.
Jane and Tess is who
Tess
you were. I'm purposely not saying everyone I can think of because
right.
I don't want anybody to think that
we're leaving
them out. But yeah, so I think, you know, if we kind of fast forward, you know, we a lot of learning.
Yep.
A lot of ups and downs. A lot of times we said we weren't doing this anymore, and then we just kept going. Just grit, I guess, is the only thing that, you know, we really
figure out a way to do it better.
Yeah.
Learn from others. So many others have helped us.
Oh my gosh.
To learn. And
that's another episode right there. Just going through, you know,
all the
people that have
helped us.
And again, I'm hesitant to do that because we're going to forget about somebody that's so important. You know, because there's just so many that, you know, we are not. And, you know, it may look like we're a few people, you know, even the team as big as it is now, it just, you know, it's way beyond that. People don't see.
Well, and also your, Nick, your ability to research and to find out things and talk to people and learn. I mean, I'm not going to give away what you're going to do with the old livestock trailer, but I couldn't be more excited about that.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a YouTube video and a podcast of its own someday as well. But you all will hear about that, I'm sure, very soon.
So you want to talk about COVID?
Right.
I mean, that was one of those other, you know, inflection points.
It absolutely was. And that was 2019. You came to me, and you were working with Caroline, Ethan, and Brittany, your wife Brittany, talking to them about, you know, how do we get, you know, out to the customers better. And
2018. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so it took. So it was 2019 when you started, though, right? Home delivery.
No, it was. The details are fuzzy, but it was around 18. Yeah.
2018.
Because we had drop points. Remember, we had drop points.
Oh, that's
Columbia,
right. We did have
Columbia,
drop points. I forgot about that.
Columbia, Towson, Annapolis.
Yes.
Every one Saturday a month, we hit them. Work well for
that.
Others did not
work
go
for
well
us.
For us.
Right.
But again, it's just one of those things.
Learning things.
Yeah.
We had.
You know, it's cool that we've always had the anchor as the farm store here because that's always our, you know, what we've fallen back on. And, you know, we had farmers markets. We did some of them.
Towson. Yep.
Yeah. Greenspring.
Greenspring.
Yeah. And then we we decided that's not what we wanted to do. We had some hardcore customers in those, you know, in those areas in Annapolis, Towson, and
Columbia. Yep.
That offered up their driveways.
Yep. That's right. I forgot about that.
And we took advantage of that. We had people come out. Some wild stories about drop points. Maybe I'll have Doug on one time. You know, when Doug is on here, I'll have to bring up the story of drive. You know, he was with me in the snow for that snowstorm. The drop points. So drop points. And then, you know, fast forward a little bit, you know, we knew drop points weren't working like we thought, for whatever reason. It was our fault, you know, something we weren't executing well on. And it was kind of natural for website, you know, because we did have the website during the drop points. It was a way for people to order, but real clunky.
It was
like
clunky, yeah.
A lot of friction. And that's like, you know, everything we do now is to lessen the friction for our customers and improve their experience.
And communicate online.
Be able to communicate clearly. So, and set expectations and exceed, you know, try to exceed them, at least meet them and try to exceed them. So anyway, 2018 or so, we were working together, our family, to figure out
execute
the type of way.
Yeah.
And I think 2018 is when we started with the current software we use, Grayscart. To our current website, we went through so many iterations, and that was pivotal that we made that decision.
That was the point I was going to make. I think you went through three or four,
yeah.
and ended up with Grayscart, and that you started to work and develop that with that company that owns that, and that's a whole nother podcast in itself as well,
for sure.
I remember you, Caroline, coming to me you did, and said, you know, we want to start this home delivery, mm-hmm. and you know, what do you think? And I said, I don't have anything to do with it, which was the exact words you said to me when I told you we wanted to start this whole operation.
Yeah, back in 2010 or whatever.
From
yeah.
Folly Face Farm. Yeah. And then you guys started that and worked hard. You getting up at 3 and 4 in the morning to start deliveries, mm-hmm. After you'd packed them the night before, and then that worked out pretty well. But the saving grace there was COVID hit.
Yeah, and we don't, you know, it's we haven't talked about that because it was such a hard time for so many people.
Yes, it's hard to talk about.
Yeah, because of our experience. You know, was kind of the opposite of what was happening in our community.
Right.
We were inundated. Our sales were up tremendously.
Did you say 1,200% one time?
At one time, yeah. I mean, I think it ended up averaging out just around 1,000 or a little less,
right.
You know, percent. And we'll talk about in another episode about how we managed that and how we were able to grow during that time. But, you know, we really haven't talked about that time much because, A, we had our heads down. I mean, we were going 24/7, it felt like.
Yep.
Our freezers were empty. That was the first time ever, I think, our walk-in, you know, was empty of product because it was all being sold. We had everything set up, though, that we capitalized on, and we,
we're fortunate to have that set up.
Yeah, so we had the website.
Had the website.
And it was very, you know, well put together because of the software we were using. Very easy for customers to get on there, see what they wanted, check out, pay online very quickly. You know, it's just and then, you know, we would deliver it. And we had the home delivery kind of logistics figured out at that time, but we were doing it. I mean,
right.
You said you didn't want anything to do with it. Hours we spent
right.
doing deliveries. I remember Caroline, our record, you know, we drove around. We had to come back twice to the farm to reload
yep.
40 orders in a day, you know, that we delivered. I mean, we were out there putting miles on. And, you know, this was, I guess, started in March of 2020 when COVID, you know, when things really got crazy.
Yes.
It was one of those things that it was kind of no looking back from the growth of the farm at that point. We made some very key hires after, you know, or kind of in that towards, you know, we knew or we predicted, no one knew. We predicted that this high would come down, right? Grocery stores would be restocked.
Right.
We would convert as many customers as we can to, as you know, make a habit of coming to us, but that we knew that, you know, this high would come down, and hopefully we were just betting that we'd be at a higher level of production and revenue and everything that than where we started, you know, when pre-COVID. Yeah, but that we knew that this peak would very likely not sustain. And I think better for the community in general, because there was a lot of turbulence, a lot of unknowns. And
it people weren't traveling, but we knew that they would eventually start going back out.
Exactly, yep. Yeah. Eating out. You know, our restaurants that been loyal to us for so long were devastated by it, and we, you know, tried to work with them to keep them, you know, help, you know, whatever we could do, you right. know. So anyway, so.
One of the keys to that, by the way, before we leave home too far there, you had found a software that you could map out the deliveries and put them in order.
Yep.
And that was huge.
Yeah. Yeah. That was huge. Yeah. We weren't just out there, you know,
going misdirections.
Yeah.
You know, and backtracking. It was, and still today when I talk to people about that, they aren't aware that there's software like that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, but that's huge. And you helped other companies too mm-hmm. with that as well during that time.
Yep.
That, outside of our market and in our market to help them make deliveries.
Yeah, yep. It was just a time where everyone, you know, just had their head down and was just getting it done. A good experience for us and our team, you know, for the farm. It was worth it. You know, all the crazy hours everyone was putting in. We made some really key hires that we were able to do because we had a larger customer base. It really changed the game. I don't know if you remember pre-COVID, although you could order and get a home delivery, there was no set time when you were going to get that.
Right.
So it was just whenever we were able to get to you, we would
put
do
the cooler out, we'll be there.
Yeah. But like now, this area gets it on this day each week. You know what I mean? So it's so a lot more structure, a lot more predictability for our customers, a lot better experience. And that all came out of being able to hire a couple, you know, Amanda and Nadia specifically. In order fulfillment and customer service and customer success, you know, that's their deal. That's what they do week in and week out. And they're extremely, extremely good at it. We're so lucky to have those two.
Yeah, very blessed.
Dedicated
team members.
Yeah. And it just got us to a point that, you know, that experience of COVID got us to, you know, where we are now. We're building off of that, you know, still today. And our sales are back well above
what they were
even at the peak of COVID. So that's just a testament to not only our customers sticking around, but you know we did hit a trough after things started selling down post COVID, but we've you know climbed our way back from that just focusing on our customers really and serving them, making their experiences the best it can be, making sure that we are telling our story, that our story of what we're doing here in a way that they can connect with, and giving them the opportunity to come out here and see it as well, you know, through our farm tours and stuff like that. So it's just been, it's been quite a ride.
And we've been very blessed with some of the people that we've had here as team members on the farm, mm-hmm. In the store. You know, during that time, we had to have people cover the store, and you know, Doug has been there every Friday. And who are some of the others? Some of the Science and Math Academy students.
Yeah, we can't fail to mention, you know, people like Sarah.
Right, Sarah. Oh my gosh.
Like, you know, Sarah started as like an intern with us. Just she's, you know, lives nearby and relatively nearby, far enough away that it was a commitment to come out here, though, quite honestly. And had a young family, and but she just wanted to be part of this.
Right.
And she started volunteering.
She did start volunteering the whole summer. Didn't miss a day that she was to hear.
Yeah, she said she'd be here. Yeah.
Yep.
And just had a career and a schedule where she could be here.
She's a teacher in Baltimore City. Yep.
And so, you know, and it's just funny, you know, it's funny looking at our farm team now and how, you know, Sarah was our first shining star.
Yes.
You know, she was the real deal. If she ever wanted to farm,
she could do it.
Yeah. Yep. And it's funny that we give everyone the opportunity to be here And we have some great guys, Jacob, Jimmy.
Yep.
You know, you can't forget about Dave, Dylan, all the people.
All those guys that help out when we need them.
Yep. All, you know, really Uncle Mike, project focused. Yep. But project focused. But our day to day people are all women.
Yes.
And it's just incredible. They possess the attributes, I think, that are right for this type of work.
And we can't forget about April.
Well, that's where I'm getting at, you know, because, you know, Sarah wasn't with us at a time when there was a lot going on. You know, most of what we were doing was still out in the field.
Right. I mean, she was out in the field with me every day.
For better or worse, we've kind of settled into the way we do things out in the field. Now, we're definitely innovating all the time and trying to be better. But at that time, we were still very much trying to figure out how we wanted to do things and what we wanted to do out there. A lot of infrastructure being built. So a lot of our focus was out there.
Yes, it was.
And now, you know, it's pretty equal, if not more, on the customer side, because we're direct to consumer, right to the free, you know, delivering to their front porch. There's a lot that goes into that, obviously. I think that vertical integration, though, is a huge part of our success, obviously, and a lesson you learned early on being in the industrial farming system, where you don't decide on the cost of your inputs, and you don't decide on what you get, you know, paid. Somebody else does. And so I think, you know, we flipped that paradigm here.
We did.
And so, I mean, the people that are surrounding us and our team, you know,
right.
and our family, Caroline,
Ethan,
mom, you know, Elizabeth and Brittany all have helped us make the tough decisions,
right.
Have some of the best ideas,
people to talk to. And bounce things off of. Brittany's been there to help load hogs, you know, for years, and then Jackson came along.
So I think it's just cool to point out that, you know, we have quite the team here,
yep.
And we'll talk about that again at some point.
Yeah, I do want to. I know you're going to interview April, I'm sure, but. When you guys first brought her on, you and Caroline talked to her, and I found out that she had something to do with animal abuse officer in Baltimore County. I didn't flip out outwardly, but inside I was like, what in the world is going on here?
Yeah, PETA sent her here with a hidden camera.
Right.
Well, I was like, you know, and you did flip. You know, you were not thrilled about it, understandably. But I also said, well, okay, what, even if that's the case, right? We're
not doing anything
we
wrong.
And we said, you know, okay, worst case scenario, that's true. The worst they're going to see is the worst of nature.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's nothing we're doing
that
we don't want to hide.
Right.
But the worst they're going to see is an animal that dies
or whatever,
a chicken eating another dead chicken. I mean, that is what happens naturally.
Right.
Obviously, we remove that as someone. We don't let that continue.
Right.
But what I'm saying is there was nothing that any camera is going to find that we were doing.
It wasn't in nature.
Right. That wasn't. Like, if they got out there, we're like, yep, that's what happens. You know what I mean?
And long story short, and Nick will go into more detail with April, but she's turned out to be volunteered here.
Pretty sure she's not a spy.
Pretty sure she's not a spy.
Yeah, by this point. If she is, she's very committed.
She's very committed.
Yeah.
And she's very committed to animal welfare and animal health.
Yeah.
And how long did she work here volunteering? For 2 years?
A long time.
Yep. And then now she's, you know, helping
part
us out
team.
On a regular basis, part of the team.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you want to just tell people what you do? I mean, I think people want to hear, you know, we kind of slid into our own roles. I mean, we planned it over time. We kind of saw how it fit as the infrastructure built up on the farm. There weren't as many. Now, still a ton of projects, still a ton of stuff to do. However, there was, you know, a lot of what we do day to day is chores, taking care of animals. So and then, you know, on the production side of things, you know, the sales side is a whole different ball game, but you want to talk to, you know, tell everyone what your day-to-day is like?
Well, the day-to-day is seasonal with the care of the animals because as the seasons change, so does the process of how they're cared for. This time of year, it's wrapping up in the winter months, and we pull the chickens' egg layers off of the pasture and the pork, the pigs, into what we call pig palaces. And then the cattle are grazing on what we refer to as a sacrifice pasture for the winter. And so let's start off with the cattle. And that basically they have some forage out there that's left over from last year that they're consuming. And then we give them an appropriate amount of hay each day or every other day, depending on how many head there are and what's needed to feed them. We roll that hay out. It's called bale grazing. They eat what they want. They sleep on it. And in the morning they get up and, like all of us, they pee and poop. Mm-hmm. And then they get another fresh bale. That also builds the organic matter in the pasture. The University of Tennessee has a study out that shows by bale grazing, we're putting about 40 pounds of nitrogen back into the pasture in the field to build up the nutrients there. And when the animals pee and poop and the hay that's left over decays, it's feeding the microbes in the soil. And then the chickens are in the hoop house and the pigs are in the pig palace, and they get fed and have bedding with wood chips and what have you for the winter. All looking forward to this spring when they get back out on pasture and into the woods. Yeah. And we'll be grazing the cattle and rotating that throughout.
Yeah. Yep. So your day to day is making sure the animals have water, food.
Yeah.
Fences are good.
Yes.
Mauser, making sure he's our livestock guard dog. He's out there with the chickens in the hoop house and he does his thing out there. So making sure he's squared away, has shelter and water and food and projects. Catching up on stuff we want to read.
Yes.
All that you're doing all that.
We have seed sales, and so that's important, trying to grow that part of the business to pass on to Nick and to the grandchildren.
Yeah. So I think, we've kind of talked about a lot of things. I'm sure we'll have others ask questions and, I'm sure we'll have more episodes together, but what are you, as we wrap up, what are you excited about? What is there anything that stands out that you're excited about other than spring being here soon and getting animals back out on pasture and doing that whole deal?
To continue to build the herd, the cow-calf herd, mm-hmm. is exciting. You've helped out tremendously in that. And we also have we didn't really talk about our beef that much, but deciding to go with the Devon breed and to do some crossbreeding with the Red Angus that you came up with this year, but previously to that to concentrate on Devon and Hereford cattle. Our bulls will always be Devon. Or Devon crosses from our original bull, Moses.
Yeah. We think right now.
Right.
We're keeping it Devon.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And of course, it'll take years mm-hmm. for the Black Angus and some of the Red Angus, or not Red Angus, Hereford, original herd to get worked out.
Yeah. The Herefords, I don't dislike them.
No, they're good.
But
they're good,
we're testing some Angus,
some Red
Devon
Angus.
Devon Cross.
Yep.
Red Angus, Devon Cross.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I think some of the other things that are going on here, the venue mm-hmm. at the farm, and Brittany's heading up that project, mm-hmm. Taking that. And we have the cow-calf herd, the venue, We had the seed company, or part of the, of Grandview. Something I'm missing. I can't think of what it is.
We're experimenting with
satellite.
Well, yeah, we're satellite farms.
Yeah.
But we're also experimenting with row crops again.
Row crops. Oh yeah.
Route one. Yep. But goes right back. Planting green.
Yes.
So first of all, no chemicals, no synthetic chemicals. You know, nothing unnatural. No pesticides, herbicides, fungicides. No. You know, none of the bad stuff. Planting right into perennial pastures.
Yes.
Using a crimper instead of a disc or spraying. And we're gonna see where that goes. See if we can grow grain. Maybe recycle that and bring it back into our feed for the pigs and chickens.
Correct.
And see. I think that's a pretty cool.
So
deal.
We're gonna on that. We've been the opportunity to cooperate with Friends School, Harford mm-hmm. County, and they're very very innovative and group that are.
Patient and understanding. Good group to work
and
with.
And a good group of people.
Yeah.
But they have the Friends Farm at Falls Creek Farm out on Route 1. Excuse me. And it's been farmed industrial for seven decades, 70 years,
mm-hmm.
with herbicides, pesticides, and chemicals. And in fact, the first year, we're out there two years ago now, or a year and a half.
Yeah, something like that.
Year and a half. We planted the first crop of mixed seed there to help break up the soil compaction.
Wake up the soil.
Wake up the soil.
Yeah.
It was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And by that we mean we wanted to bring in, we planted eight seed, 10 seed mix to a variety of plants to build biomass. And then we roller crimped that down. And all the butterflies and earthworms came back right after that first crop.
Bees,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the deer out there are enjoying it, too.
Yeah, well, that's another whole
thing.
But, yeah, I mean, I think we have several YouTube videos that we did from out there. So if you're interested
right.
more about that, you can go
that's
on
our
YouTube.
Website. Some of them are or not.
On, yeah, but your YouTube.
YouTube.
Yeah, these links from our website.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
We've run into some challenges there already.
For sure. But, I mean, there's nothing we haven't done over the years that's been worthwhile that hasn't either failed first or definitely a huge learning curve.
Yeah, we learn mostly by all of our mistakes.
Yeah, which, like I said, anything worthwhile.
Right.
You know, you have to mistake your way to success. So,
okay.
I thank you for sitting down. Glad we got your...
Thank you for having me.
Your story and kind of the origin of the farm. I'm sure we'll talk more about it. I'm excited to have a bunch of other folks on here so that we can talk to together. And if you want to learn more about the farm, you can go to grandviewfarming.com. That's a good way to get a hold of us as well. And we'll be happy to answer questions. And, if you have something you want us to talk about or you want to come on and talk to us and tell your story, let us know. We'd love to have you.
Good.
So just a thanks to everybody that makes the farm go, our team, our customers, just an incredible group. I certainly never thought it would be what it is now. And we have, ambitions to keep growing. So just really cool. And all in the last 10-ish years or so. So
right.
Good stuff.
And we have three generations on the farm now. So,
yeah, very cool.
Looking forward to all that.
Yeah, I mean it's at a time when everyone's seemingly leaving farms and farms are shutting down. This is something different. So pretty cool testament to your what you've done here. So thank you. All right, that'll do it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I just want to take a moment to invite you to visit our website, grandviewfarming.com, shop our selection, and consider having an order delivered to you this week. I also wanted to let you know that you can join us for a tour on the farm, book an overnight stay, or even your next event or wedding. And please also check out our YouTube. We have a ton of great videos on there that give you a virtual tour of the farm. So until next time, have a great day.